Hello, and welcome to the decision of a quick pint. Now, I had the very interesting experience recently of meeting Jordan Peterson and chatting with Jordan Peterson, and I thought I would tell you a little bit about what happened. So, in essence, there was an after party at a conference that I was at, where various interesting people had attended, and I noticed a queue. And I thought about, I said to other people, I said, what's that the queue for? It was about five people. And they said, oh, Jordan Peterson's over there. And I thought, wow, okay, I'll join the queue then. I'll join the queue jokingly, as someone said jokingly, you know, to get a blessing, to get a blessing from the holy man. So, I joined the queue, and forward we moved, and eventually I was at the front, and it was my chance to speak to him, and it was extremely interesting, and it allowed one to realize what, first of all, why he has been able to become such a successful political guru, should we call him? I mean, certainly he has guru-like qualities, and really why he has flown so high. So, of course, I had to say something. I had to ask him something. So I asked him about a very interesting comment which he made on a when he was on a panel discussion before an audience on an Australian TV program called Q&A, I think it was called. And he said that he took the view that people who get involved, people some people who have unresolved psychological problems, who have unresolved feelings of anxiety or unresolved feelings of low self-esteem or that sort of thing, deal with it not by actually dealing with those problems and asking themselves why they have low self-esteem and trying to understand you know, what's wrong with them and how they can develop and how they can improve, but by basically throwing themselves into large-scale projects which are focused around essentially saving the world. And he said that in his experience, often those people that are the social justice warriors, whatever you want to call them, the activist types, are those kinds of people that throw themselves into these projects in which they kind of assert moral superiority, and in which they say that they're there to save the world and the world's going to end and they've got to do something about it. Actually, what that is a reflection of is that they haven't done something about problems within themselves, and it's as though they project those problems onto the world itself and try to save the world itself. And I thought this was an extremely interesting point. I asked him a bit more about this, and he basically just explained that, yeah, that is his personal experience. That if you have these kinds of problems, these kinds of difficulties, these kinds of low self-esteem and anxiety about yourself, and that kind of thing, then one of the ways that you can deal with this is by basically throwing all of your energy into some kind of large project where you feel that you're doing something and improving the world, to distract yourself from these negative feelings. And also, it's a way of overcoming these negative feelings. It's a way of saying to yourself that actually, you know, you are good and you are important and you are morally superior to everybody else, and therefore it's a way of kind of suppressing these negative feelings, and therefore, you know, getting on with your life. And this, of course, explains quite neatly the degree to which the activist type, that those that aren't prepared to just simply, you know, get on with life and be content with life, it explains why those people are so angry, or they tend to be so angry. It explains why those people are so morally self-righteous. It explains why those people tend to be so denigrating of those that disagree with them, because those people are dealing with basically a fundamental lack of self-esteem, a fundamental lack of self-worth, and they have to come up with a coping mechanism. And being strongly involved in these large social projects in which they are basically kind of saying to themselves that they are in a way better than other people, is their way of coping. Now, I then commented to him, and he didn't seem to be aware of the research, that there is a great deal of research which is, well, a great deal, there's an increasing number of papers that have demonstrated an association between being left wing or woke, and both Machiavellianism and narcissism. And of course, Machiavellianism, you can see the why, and also there's research indicating that those that are woke, those that are very left wing, are very high in neuroticism. That is to say, they feel negative feelings strongly. Negative feelings such as anger, such as anxiety, such as low self-esteem, a low sense of worth, such that the world is swirling chaos, and whatever. And it, and the there was a study that indicated that the relationship with Machiavellianism is mediated by, is caused by the neuroticism, i.e. if you feel that the world is chaos and you're basically going to feel under threat, you're going to feel that everything's awful, everything's against you, everything could collapse at any moment, and therefore you're going to want to have power, and you're going to want to have power over other people and over the world itself. That's what Machiavellianism is mainly about. It's about power. So how do you get that power? Well, you gain social status in some way. How do you gain social status? Well, in a left-wing society, you are more woke, more left-wing than the last person. And so you throw yourself into these social justice warrior, into these woke projects. And so you can see how that relationship develops. Similarly, with narcissism, if you have very low self-esteem, with the vulnerable narcissist subtype, if you have very low self-esteem, very low self-worth, then a way that you can try to cope with that is to tell yourself that you are better than other people, that you are, you know, snob, basically, that you are superior to other people, that you are morally superior. How can you prove to yourself that you are morally superior? You can throw yourself into some huge project about, say, saving the world or whatever, in which you're preaching to people that they've got to stop using oil, they've got to stop eating meat or whatever it is. And this is showing to you that you're involved in this project, there are others in it, that you are in fact morally superior, and therefore you're suppressing those negative feelings that are at your heart. But of course, you still feel them. You don't really quite feel that you're superior. And so therefore, when someone criticizes the project that you're involved in, the thing that is giving you the sense of self-esteem, the thing that is giving you a secure sense of self, then you can get very upset and attack them because they are reminding you of this vulnerable little infant that is beneath the surface, basically. And Peterson was extremely interested in this, and Peterson asked me if I could send him details of the research and that kind of thing. The other thing that was fascinating about him was just his the look. This hypnotic stare. And once he moved beyond me explaining my research to him, and he started to talk about his views on it, there was this piercing, hypnotic, mesmeric look, which I haven't experienced very much before, which was quite unnerving. It was unnerving, but also it made you feel special. It made you feel important. And other people commented on this that talked to him for those minutes or whatever that you were talking to him. He made you feel like you were the center of his universe, and he stared right into you, almost like somebody was staring deep into your soul and completely understood you. And I completely knew everything about you. It was like a sort of semi-religious. It was this extraordinary stare. I've seen photographs of Rasputin where there is a similar intense look, and it was quite extraordinary. Other people that met him commented on it as well. This intense stare where he seems fascinated by you. For that moment, he makes you seem like, you know, you're the center of his universe and you're worth $1 million. And I'm sure he was doing that to everybody. I don't know whether it's a skill that he's learned as a clinic, as a psychologist or whatever, a sort of hypnotic skill, or whether it is something to do with charisma, which he obviously has. But he was able to adopt this penetrating, extraordinary stare. Which there was someone taking photographs of me while I was talking to him, and you see the look on my face, just amazement, as I am looked at in this way, like that episode. There's an episode of Asterix where someone tries to hypnotize Asterix the Gaul, where Asterix goes to, I think, I forget which episode it is, and there's this hypnotic look on the man's face. It was like that. So you can see that. I wonder if that's why Kathy Newman, when she interviewed him on Channel 4, said such silly things to him about, oh, so we should all be lobsters or whatever, because she was unnerved by this intense look, which perhaps cannot be so easily captured on camera. I don't know. But it was a highly, highly visceral experience, and I'm extremely glad that I met him and chatted to him.
Are you ready for the future of the West?